Okay, let's jump right into hour number three here with Dr. Henry Nyman, our nightly report on the coronavirus pandemic. We have big news today. It'll be interesting to hear what Henry has to say about it. Comes out of Russia, and it does seem that Russia is the first to announce that they are in the business of vaccinating people against the coronavirus. Putin says Russia has approved the world's first COVID vaccine, says his own daughter has been vaccinated. Russia also reports that they have received orders from 20 countries for 1 billion doses of the world's COVID vax. Interesting story. Here's another one for you. Study. Certain masks, and we talked about this with Henry last night or the night before, increase transmission of coronavirus worse than going maskless. Some of the masks actually break larger particles down into smaller particles, and they are broadcast more efficiently, at least in terms of the virus being spread. I mentioned this last night. Avoid wearing coronavirus face masks with vents or valves. This is a CDC pronouncement. You can read that and take a look at it. It's up there right now. 21-year-old thought he had a mild case of coronavirus. Survived it. Didn't feel very good. But then went into massive major organ failure. He did survive. But this has to do with, obviously, the polybasic cleavage ability of this rather nasty virus. This is interesting, too, and it does have to do with polybasic cleavage, I'm sure. Researchers now are exposing what they say is a brand new vulnerability for SARS-CoV-2, and I haven't read it thoroughly, but that's another good one to read. There's a lot out there, and it's not going to go away, the virus, nor is the news about the virus. So, well, there we go. Henry, welcome back. How are you tonight?
Well, it's kind of busy out there, as you said.
Yeah, it is.
And as far as the vaccine's concerned, you know, it's kind of a funny announcement. They haven't really given a whole lot of details on the
vaccine. Not that I've seen. No, and you'd see more than I ever will.
They kind of are implying that, it seems to have worked in a very limited number of people, including Putin's daughter. But that's really kind of the definition of a phase one trial. I mean, a phase one trial is given to a limited number of people, and they kind of look for, you get a little bit of information on efficiency as well as safety. And if everything looks good, and there's usually some, juggling the dose, that usually phase one might try two or three different doses, and those results will kind of define which ones they want to move forward into larger numbers into a phase three trial. And they also get a little bit of safety to make sure that those that do get the virus don't have any adverse effects. And so what they're really describing, where they're using a handful of patients and have some efficacy and safety, really is what happened with all of the vaccine candidates that have advanced to phase three trials. They've all gone through that initial step. And that, like Moderna is only going to use two doses, two concentrations, I think, or they might even go all the way down to one. I think in their phase one, they tried it at three different concentrations. and there are some issues at the highest.
What
ones
are they, Henry?
Excuse
me. When you say three different concentrations, what are they concentrating? Is this an attenuated virus? Is this a genetic piece of a virus that they're going to hope will trigger antibody response? What are we talking about here?
Right. Well, and it's notable to take a look. The two trials that are most advanced, both are using the same approach. They're taking the spike gene and they're putting it into an adenovirus carrier. So the adenovirus basically directs the machinery to go ahead and make the spike protein in the patient. So the patient doesn't get the protein and doesn't get the virus. Uh-huh. It gets the gene to make the protein. And then there's promoters and different elements that are put on that so that it makes it.
They're using an adeno, or some people used to say adenovirus, A-D-E-N-O, adenovirus,
right.
Adenovirus, as a
right.
carrier?
Right, and they're using, and they use three different concentrations. So the amount the level of virus that they put in the patient, you know, one group got one concentration, the other got a lower one, and then another group got an even lower one. So they expect to see somewhat of a dose related response, and and so if they put in more virus, they expect to get a more vigorous response, but there can be a limit to that, and they can start getting side effects if they put in too much. And so it's kind of tighter out how much virus they're going to put in. And and in the case of Moderna, I think they decided that the highest concentration, they were getting some side effects, so they weren't going to use that. They're going to use the other two, and that they also looked at what kind of response they gave, that they got from one injection, and what kind of response they got from a second booster injection that was given like 28 days later.
Right.
And they came to the conclusion that the best results were the two lower concentrations and with the booster, so that they needed two shots to do it. 28 days apart. And
excuse me one more time, please. They're hoping to create in the body antibodies. Yeah? Is that what they're after with this adenovirus and the spike protein? They want antibodies.
They want antibodies to the spike protein, and that is what they got in the phase one. So that they measured the virus, the antibodies, and they got the titer of the antibodies.
Yeah.
And what they found was that the titer was significantly higher if they gave two injections instead of one. And that they, I'm not positive they ended up settling on one concentration or two concentrations for the phase three, but they didn't use all three of them. I think they eliminated the highest one because of side effects. And so they determined exactly how they were going to do the expanded trial. And the expanded trial, they're essentially starting recruiting right now. They're going to recruit like 30,000 patients. And part of the reason they have the number that high is because this is kind of see how what kind of protection it gives. So they don't just want to know what kind of immune response they got as far as how much antibody do they have in the blood. They want to know how well that antibody prevents the virus from causing an infection in those. So they want to immunize 30,000 people and then see how many of those 30,000 people actually get infected with the virus, you know, in the field, you know, doing whatever they normally do. And then to see if some of them actually do get infected with the virus in spite of being immunized.
Right.
You know, how severe that is and how many of the people that do get infected have to go in the hospital and how many end up in the ICU and so compare that.
Is the idea of at least maybe the Moderna vax, is the idea that the vaccine is supposed to significantly configure the antibodies in people's immune systems to where you're exposed to a virus like this one, you don't get any infection, or you get a low-grade infection? Does it just reduce the virility of the infection, or is it supposed to be a blanket shutdown of any infection?
Well, they would hope that they get no infection, that you would have an immune response, that they measure the ability of those antibodies to neutralize the virus. So they basically, when they were in the phase one, they would collect blood from those that were immunized, and then they would mix the antibody with the virus in a test tube to see if the antibodies would be able to inhibit the virus from infecting the cells. That's essentially what they were measuring. They weren't just measuring antibodies that could bind to the virus. They were looking for neutralizing antibodies, which means that those antibodies neutralize the virus and they prevent the virus from infecting the cells. And so that's what they were looking at initially. And they had, you know, in the phase one, they had different age groups. So they were looking at how well they worked in the, you know, the more optimal age group, like maybe 25 to 40 year olds. And then they had some older patients. And then I guess they probably had some younger patients. So they had different groups that they were looking at to see if it went across the board and how well it worked in the different age groups. And then in phase three, they expand that. So they have a lot more patients that get the vaccine. They get the, and then they, you know, while they're waiting to see if they're going to get infected, they can do all the same measurements. They can draw blood from them. They can see what kind of what the level of the neutralizing antibodies were when they got their first injection and how much higher it got when they did the second injection. And they can see, you know, how well it works with a much larger population so that they can see, you know, does it work for older patients as well as younger patients. So the main point I'm making, to go into a little bit of this detail, is the amount that's already been done in the trials that have advanced to phase three. They've already met these initial goals that, you know, as far as they can tell, there's not major adverse effects. They might get a little redness at the site of injection, but they don't have any major side effects. They get neutralizing antibodies. The antibodies, you know, work at inhibiting the virus's ability to infect cells. And the ones that have a high titer, they think they're going to be protective. The ones that have a lower titer, they say maybe they're going to be protective, and that's what the phase three is going to decide. So it sounds like what these trials have is essentially what Russia has, except Russia is saying, we're going to do phase three trials and we're going to get more information, but we've already got something. We're taking orders. You know, we've got a vaccine, even though they're still in clinical trial. And that's essentially what the lead candidates are in the U.S. and the UK.
Except
Russia is just getting more publicity, and they're basically saying we're open for business. And it sounded like, you know, they were talking about making millions of doses, like 10, 20, or 30 million. And that's kind of what they need in Russia. So it wasn't like they necessarily were going to be supplying antibodies to the world, although they were talking about doing licensing so that they would go ahead and set these other countries up so that they could make their own vaccines locally. And they would, you know, essentially license the technology. They would essentially make the vaccine the same way Russia did, but they would be doing it in their labs using the constructs. You know, essentially, you know, I'm not even sure what the Russian, you know, that immunogen is. Whether they're taking the virus and killing it, whether they.
So we don't even understand the techniques of the Russian virus vax right now. We don't know.
Right, right. The only thing I've seen is they basically tested a limited number of people, including Putin's daughter, and they are expanding it to a phase three trial, but they're essentially announcing that it works, essentially, which is really what happened with the other ones. I mean, China says they've got a vaccine and they're going to be vaccinating their military initially and maybe some first responders. And that's who the highest priority is, I think, in Russia also. And so it's like several countries are at these initial stages where they've got some results. They got, you know, it worked to the level that they got an immune response. They probably have neutralizing antibodies and they've done a limited number of people. And now they're kind of expanding it, but they're essentially to selected individuals, they're giving it already, even though they haven't done the larger trial.
All right, we've got at least half a dozen vaccines in the sweepstakes. They're apparently using maybe half a dozen different techniques to try to erect a vaccine that will function. They're not all the same.
There's some duplication, but
not much.
Moderna and the UK are both using an adenovirus vector, but one is using, I think, a human adenovirus. The other is using a primate adenovirus. So there's little variations, but
really?
The technology.
Now this the adenovirus will be dead in the vax, correct? Or is it going to be attenuated?
The adenovirus is, I don't think it's going to be attenuated. I think, it's not going to be a regular adenovirus. It's going to essentially going to have this spike protein.
It's a genetically altered adenovirus that will be put in the vax
essentially in live format. It'll have a SARS-CoV spike protein, and the virus will make that. I don't know if it. I'm not sure that it's going to be the whole virus. I think it might be the machinery to make these proteins. I'm not sure that it is infectious or not. I guess maybe it is infectious.
Well, I'm concerned about using, and I know it's been done, I know it's old news, but you mentioned primate adenovirus with the human spike protein from coronavirus genetically mixed in with it. That's a little, isn't that a little bit weird to you, or is that okay?
No, I think there was an advantage to that in that, human adenovirus people might already have antibodies to it, and then the antibodies they have may inhibit the ability of the virus to replicate. So by putting the human adenovirus in some people it won't work because they've already been infected by a human adenovirus, and therefore they'll neutralize the virus before there's enough of the spike protein there to make the antibody. Yeah. So the virus really won't replicate that well. And if they use a primate virus, it will be able to escape the human adenovirus antibodies that the host might have, and therefore it will survive. Now, this particular scheme is not new. I think they've done this with Ebola before. So the Ebola vaccine that was used with the big outbreak in Western Africa, I seem to remember, was an adenovirus, a chimp adenovirus, which I think is the same thing that's being used here. So I mean, that's what the advantage of these cassettes, if you will, that they have the virus set up that it's going to grow and it's going to express whatever you introduce, and you can introduce whatever gene you want. So they did the surface protein of the Ebola virus to make the Ebola vaccine. So, I mean, you weren't being infected with an Ebola virus. It was a adenovirus with the Ebola surface protein as the target. And in this case, they're using the SARS-CoV as the target. So that's what the advantage of having this system set up is you can basically put the surface protein of any RNA virus essentially into this package, and it'll express that protein in the cell, and then will elicit an immune response. And so there's different versions of what's being used. I know the two that are the furthest along, both are adenovirus constructs, and both require two doses. And so that's important when you hear some of these projections. I mean, Trump's out there saying, well, we might have this by the election. And in fact, he didn't even say that initially. He said that in response to a reporter's question. I think he originally said by the end of the year. And then some reporter said, well, you think you might have a, you know, before the election? He said, I think we could. Yeah, you know, so it was kind of like he was just going to say yes. He wasn't going to say no, I don't think so. So he says yes based on absolutely nothing. And anybody that can look at a calendar knows that it's nonsense, because the lead candidate has just recently announced that they're advancing to phase 3. So they just started recruiting the 30,000 patients that are going to be given this vaccine. So they haven't recruited the patients yet. And once they have the patients, they can start giving the vaccination. But so they're not going to start the vaccines until the vaccinations are kind of like the beginning of September. And there's a 20-day interval between the first vaccination and the second vaccination. And then there's another 2 weeks after the second vaccination before they're going to have any immunity, you know, or optimal immunity. They might have a little bit earlier. So it's going to take 6 weeks from when they start the trial. So even if they start injecting people, you know, September 1st, it's going to be the middle of October before they can even start measuring what kind of antibodies levels they have after the second injection. Right. So there's no way that they're going to know anything about how safe it is and how well it works for a large group, because most of the people they're recruiting won't have even had the second shot in October. So there's no way that at the beginning of November, they're going to say, yeah, it works fine. There's no side effects. Well, they might say there's no side effects because most of the people haven't even got the injection yet, or at least they haven't gotten the second injection. And so there's no way it's going to be done in November. And even having enough data by the end of the year is probably pushing it, because most of the people aren't going to be infected. I mean, you need them to have exposure and see if they're protected. If they don't have any disease, it could be that, you know, it's only been a month and they didn't get infected in the month. So you need to take several months to know that there's protection. And then it's the same thing with adverse effects. So that gives you an idea where these vaccines are, that they'll have them, but they're not going to have a full data set until the end of the year, the beginning of next year. And so if everything goes well, you know, they might have that initial answer, and then it's a matter of scaling up and lining up, you know, millions of doses to immunize people. And those people aren't going to be immunized for at least 6 weeks after they start, because they need to get a second injection after 4 weeks. And it takes at least two more weeks for the second injection to have an immune response. So if you can look at a calendar and count to six, you know, you would know that these vaccines aren't going to be ready to be in again. They're not going to know anything at the beginning of November. So speaking of pandemics, I forgot to mention this yesterday, that the Spanish flu was trending on Twitter yesterday. So it was kind of like, wow, why are people talking about the Spanish flu yesterday? You know, the Spanish flu happened a while ago, and people talk about this thing similar to the Spanish flu. But why would so many people be talking about the Spanish flu? And it turns out that they're talking about the Spanish flu because Trump commented on the Spanish flu. And he said, you know, the Spanish flu was in 1917. And it really led to the end of World War II.
That's what Donald told us. He said it ended World War II.
Correct. It ended World War II, and it was the 1917 pandemic. Now, Donald has been saying that the 1918 pandemic was in 1917 for a couple of years now, and I have never heard him say that the pandemic was 1918. And, you know, it caught my ear the first time I heard it, because why did he say 1917? Everybody knows that the pandemic was in 1918. It had a milder version of the spring of 1918. And the second wave was in the fall of 1918. And it did lead to the end of the war, which was in the fall of 1918. And that's when they had the parades, and that's when they noted that, you know, they have all these groups, you know, getting together, they'll have this sharp increase in cases and overwhelm the healthcare delivery. And that's what happened in Philadelphia. And they banned parades and large gatherings in St. Louis. And they had a much flatter curve. It didn't really get out of control. The healthcare was able to handle the cases because they got sick over a longer time period, and it didn't have as high of a spike. And that's where the whole concept of flattening the curve came from, was from the fall of 1918 and comparing the results in Philadelphia to the results in St. Louis. And so, for some reason, Trump always says 1917. And, you know, there were people on Twitter today, oh, that was unfair. You know, he just slipped up. He usually says 1918. And I swear I have heard him say 1917 at least a couple dozen times. I have never heard him say 1918. And it's kind of like nobody's ever told him. I mean, his staff is too afraid to say, you know, it really was 1918. Mm-hmm. It wasn't 1917. Right. And so he says this all the time. And it's always striking because he says 1917. And he never gets it right. And so that was part of the reason. And then he said it was, you know, World War II. And, you know, I don't know if it was a slip up or not. I mean, basically, when he gives his speeches, he's reading, and usually it sounds and looks like he's reading it for the first time. And so he frequently makes mistakes, but he generally catches it. So he kind of repeats it. He said he reads it wrong, and then he reads it over again right. And he does it smoothly, so it sounds like he was really planning on saying the wrong thing and the right thing, and that both happened, and he ends up saying it right the second time. So he is self-correcting. He did self-correct the World War II. And, you know, it makes you kind of wonder, because, I mean, he's a baby boomer. He was born right after World War II. The baby boom was due to the end of World War II. All the soldiers came home, started a family, and so they all started about the same time, and the baby boomers started being born in 46, more 47, 48, you know, it went all the way through the 1960 or so. And that led to this big increase in populations in the U.S. and probably around the world. And so he would know that World War II ended in 1945, which is not that close to 1917. And so mixing up the World War I and World War II with two very different dates is something that would be relatively hard to do. But he managed to do that at least yesterday. I haven't really heard the World War I/World War II. I mean, I know that it ended World War I, but I haven't heard Trump tack that on to the pandemic. He usually just says, you know, it's a bad pandemic in 1917, and, you know, there were 50 million people died or something. So anyway, that was trending yesterday, and today the issue of the sports kind of came back in the news. Apparently, the Big Ten was kind of having meetings this morning that, you know, some of the players were saying, you know, we should go ahead and play. Trump was tweeting that, you know, we need college football in the fall. And they had another meeting this morning and then ended up in the same position, that they decided that they're going to postpone the Big Ten until springtime. And hopefully things will be better in the springtime. And then the Pac-12, which is the West Coast, did the same thing, that they're postponing the fall season and aiming for the springtime. Right. And my guess is they're either all going to fall in line, or some are going to be foolish enough to go ahead and start the season in the fall. And it's not going to work. There's no way. I mean, a lot of these schools are really big schools with 30, 40,000 students there. These students are not going to have the virus under control, even if only 20,000 of them are on campus and 20,000 are online. And the virus is going to spread. It's going to be in the student body. Uh-huh. The football players are going to get infected. The infected football players are going to infect other football players. The coaches are going to be infected. And at best they'll get a couple of games in, and then there'll be too many players, too many coaches, right, too many support people, too many referees, and they won't even have the school. Too many students.
You're taking all the fun out of it, Henry. It's no more fun.
They're going to say, go back to your computers at home and get off campus. We're shutting it down just like we did in the springtime. And so that's the prediction there. And then, you know, we talked yesterday about the, it's kind of debatable how to handle the almost certain uptick in cases. Mm-hmm. And, I thought it was pretty straightforward. And I think that it's straightforward for the scientists. I mean, the scientists know that there are a lot of things in the works to handle the virus. As you mentioned, there's like six different ways to make a vaccine, and these vaccines are in, phase one, two, or three trials. Several are in phase three now. They're not going to have a vaccine ready by election, but they might have initial results by the end of the year. More likely it'll be the beginning of the year. But then there's other antivirals that are in the works. I mean, remdesivir produces a little bit of response. It's likely to end up being like HIV, where
there's nothing really encouraging in what you're saying. Nothing.
Well, it's encouraging that I think there will be a solution. It won't be in 2020. It'll be the beginning of 2021. So the idea, right now, the situation is pretty similar to 1918. You don't really have a good treatment for the virus. You can wear a mask. Mm-hmm. You can, avoid crowds. You're kind of doing the same, wash your hands. Yeah, you're essentially doing the same things that you could do in 1918. Most scientists are assuming that the situation will improve dramatically in 2021. There'll be a lot more tools available to treat patients and attack the virus and get the virus more under control. And other countries were able to at least get the virus to a manageable state. Trump was out today trying to say, these countries in Europe, they've got twice, the case numbers have doubled. Everything he said was in terms of percentages. And if you got 100 cases and it goes to 200 cases, they doubled, but it's only an extra 100 cases. The U.S. has 50,000 cases, and maybe it's level. It's flattened off. It used to be 70,000, and now it's leveled off at 50,000. But 50,000 in one day is a lot different than 200 in one day, even if the 200 is double the level that it was a week or two ago. And so he's talking about percentages and trying to argue that all these other countries are having problems too, and we've got all these things coming up. Well, we do have a bunch of things coming up, but the pandemic has been grossly mismanaged. Trump tried to do it to gain political points, turn it into a culture war with whether you should wear a mask, whether you shouldn't wear a mask. Politicizing a pandemic is a bad idea. It doesn't make any sense when
it's not exactly competent public health. That's for damn sure. No.
No, because you got the states battling each other for scarce
chaos
resources. The government should be centralized and making sure that there's enough to go around and help distribute it instead of having everybody competing with each other. And mm-hmm. then he's constantly, you know, he said, oh, Arizona did real well. I gave him $18 billion or something. So he's going to go and pick and choose which states he's going to flood with resources and which ones he's going to say, well, you know, I don't know if we got enough for you guys. We can give you this and, you know, maybe we can give you more later and da, 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 da. And basically bounce around with what's going to be available. It's still not clear that if things get as bad as they're projected in the fall, that there's still going to be enough PPEs, whether there's still going to be enough testing. Testing is still an issue at this late date. And it's the same issues that led to the problems in the spring, that you didn't know where the virus was. The effort was, oh, we're just going to look at people from China. And so you were identifying new cases on the West Coast. You weren't really looking at anything on the East Coast because the people hadn't been to China. They had been to Europe. So the people infected in Europe came to the U.S. They were kind of flying under the radar because they didn't meet the criteria for testing, and the criteria were fairly strict because there weren't enough test kits. So we were kind of flying blind in the spring, and you're running into the same problems now. I mean, the numbers are up on the desk today. You know, they're up to 1,300 deaths, and it's kind of, oh, they just upgraded it. So it just went up 80. So it's up to 40. California, I don't know. They've had all kinds of issues. They, you know, 5 minutes ago, they had numbers as of 1:47 in the afternoon. They just updated it to 8:14. And so the number of cases went from 4,000 to 11,400. And the number of deaths went from 50 to 172. So there's another 120 deaths. So it's up to over 1,425 or so is what the deaths were today. The additional cases will bring it up to around 56,000. So it's kind of what I was projecting yesterday, that it'd be close to 60,000. It's a few thousand shy of that. It would be above 1,000 deaths. It's up to 1,400 deaths. And so the situation right now is still bad. You know, it's going down a little bit, maybe in California, but, you know, they had 13,000 yesterday and 11,000 a day. It's not clear if some of these were backlogged because they were having trouble processing them or whether these are actual numbers. So the numbers are a little bit fuzzy, but the California has 172 deaths today. Florida is 277 deaths today. Texas has 220 deaths today. And now Georgia, where they've got those issues where masks are optional. They went and, you know, jumped back on. They took the lockdown off first in Georgia. Even Trump said maybe they're a little too fast.
Even Georgia Trump is now that. Up.
Yeah, Georgia's now up into triple digits on deaths. They're up to 122 deaths today. They're again getting back close to 4,000. They were 3,563 new cases today. So they're heading towards 4,000 cases a day with now over 100 deaths. They'll be pushing to 200 deaths a day in a week or so. And they're starting school, and they had the initial school starts that were in the news last week, at the beginning of this week, where they've got the hallways are jammed. They've got masks is being optional. There's areas in Florida, same thing. You know, they're going, everybody's got to go back to school. They got to do in-class teaching. And masks are optional. You know, Florida has got something like, I don't know, 17-19% of the cases are positive. They're flooded with cases, and they're going to start school. And they're going to start school with most of the students not wearing masks in many of the school districts. And then they'll probably start football too. I mean, if they're going to have all these students walking around without masks, they might as well go football games on Friday or Saturday, and same thing. And so these numbers are going to start increasing dramatically. They're going to go up into September. They're going to get much higher than they are today.
Sure.
So two or three weeks for the virus to start spreading and people to get tested and to get those numbers. And you're going to end up in this situation where if you had it managed like you have in other countries where you're basically putting out fires, you're doing contact tracing and you're identifying cases early and you're quarantining and getting out of control. And instead, what you got is totally out of control. And you already know why it got out of control. And you're doing the exact same thing. There were criteria for lifting the lockdown. Yeah. You're going to have declining cases for 14 days. These guys didn't have declining cases. They said, well, we're going to, you know, take off the lockdown anyway. And, you know, the numbers went down to around 20,000 a day. And now they're up to mid-50s, heading to 60,000 a day. So the numbers per day are up. And those are down. It was up over 70,000. So it's kind of flattening out in the 50 to 60,000 cases. Mm-hmm. It's flattening out. Well, I don't even know that it's flattening out. It's going up with the deaths because the deaths are a trailing indicator. So the deaths are now reflecting the increases in cases that started several weeks ago. Right. And up to 1,400 cases today, and you're heading back to the 2,000 deaths today. And that's how you're going to end up with 300,000 deaths by the beginning of December, and you're going to be heading to 400,000 deaths in the beginning of the year. And and that's all going to happen before any of these approaches really are widespread. You know,
widespread, accepted, and we've got to have some real provenance here, too. They've got to be tested. They've got to be shown to the public to be effective and...
Right. And that's not going to happen till next year.
No.
Because, I mean, the vaccines, you not only have to immunize them and say they're making antibodies, the question is, A, do the antibodies protect? And B, how long do the antibodies last? I mean, are they going to be antibodies
long.
That last for 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months? Are they going to last for 2 or 3 seasons? And that's pretty much wide open at this stage. You know, there are some reports that the antibody response doesn't last that long. So then there's question about T cells, and there's questions about, well, are some people already immune because they got a cold virus and they've got T cell memory that cross reacts, and that's why you know, the percent positive got up to 20-30%, but it seemed to kind of level off then. So is there a percentage of the population that's already got some immunity from a cold virus? And is that what's causing the large number of asymptomatic cases? Are they people that got infected, but they've got some T cell immunity from a cold virus, and therefore they kind of keep the virus under control so they don't get that sick, but it seems that they're still able to transmit the virus, so they're vectoring the virus and it's spreading, but they're not really getting that sick, at least, you know, overtly. It's not really clear. You know, there's example of people that, have lung damage, even though they're asymptomatic, so that there are battles going on with the virus. And even though they're able to control it, it doesn't mean there is a collateral damage trying to get rid of the virus. So the numbers are going to keep going up. We're past the weekend, so, you know, the numbers will be high tomorrow and the next day and through Friday. And there'll be more issues with the schools, and more, I predict, more football conferences are going to go the same route as the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and they're going to put things on hold and hope for the best in the spring, and figure they can still get the season in, but it's not going to be in the fall.
Okay.
So I think that's where we are.
All right,
we'll
Henry.
See what happens tomorrow. Okay. Stay
good
safe.
Good summary. Thank you. All righty. See you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. And there he goes. Okay, back with you tomorrow night. Let's see. It's Wednesday tomorrow night. Bill Gein will be here. William Gein, alipac.us. Do drop them a note and tell them how much you appreciate what they do. Joel Skousen here tomorrow night as well. We'll get a lot of interesting insights from him. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.